Joined now, lawyer extraordinaire and a massive KISS fan.
Yeah, member, card-carrying member of the KISS Army, you could say. Yeah.
Jeff O'Brien, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I put up a post over the weekend that I got a little pushback on.
Feedback. But
yeah, I got some pushback on it. I said I've never quite got the KISS fandom. And it doesn't mean that – I didn't mean that as like a dig on KISS the band, like the music. Their music's fine. No problem with KISS the band. Just never quite got why that band developed such a devoted and hardcore fandom when there are a lot of other bands in that era that I think were equally as good that didn't quite ever really get that sort of – reaction.
Yeah, I think
I think, a picture of you in full KISS.
And I think that's part of it. I think that part of it is, you know, and you hear those guys talk, and, you know, in the 70s, they weren't standing out there in their bell bottoms and their handlebar mustaches. It was a visually exciting performance. I mean, they probably knew about three or four chords, and that was cool. But, you know, when you've got blood spitting, fire breathing, drums risers going up in the air, lasers being shot out of guitars flying around the stage. When you're young, you know, when you're, you know, of an age where you're into rock and roll and you see that going on, you know, it was kind of like Star Wars meets the Beatles. And I think that's part of what their appeal was, and still is it's just a visual, it's a visually exciting live performance. It's you get great songs no matter who you go see, but with them, they leave it all on the field.
Well, and they were incredibly, I wasn't into them, but I had a lot of friends around me that were into them and certainly very well aware of the fandom growing up as a kid. But their music was really accessible too. It was just, you know, it was something that was very sort of inviting along with the theatrics of it. It was cool to be in the KISS Army. Funny side note, I completely misread your post because when it came across as an alert, right? Because, you know, Drew's posted on his Facebook page. I read it as in you never got over being a KISS fan. And I didn't, and I remember I saw it, I went, I didn't realize that Drew was into KISS, but that makes sense. I completely misread it.
And as I commented on Drew's post on Saturday, as I got older and got involved with politics and have my ways, one thing I like about them is they resist this behavior of having to use their celebrity to influence their fans' political decisions. Gene Simmons makes a couple comments once in a while, but basically about blowing terrorists up. But other than that,
right,
they keep their mouth shut, and they'll even say, well, don't listen to us, we're idiots. And I like that there's so many artists these days that feel that they want to use this as a platform to push their views on their fans. And I like that KISS doesn't do that, to the point where I think Trump's team even invited them to perform at the inauguration, and they said, no, we do not do politics.
Yeah. Good.
Even if maybe one or two of them may have been leaning his way, they do not do politics.
Yeah, I respect that. I think you're right. A lot of people, they get famous and they're like, now I have a responsibility because I've been given a platform.
You're right.
And I have an obligation to try to make the world a better place. It's like, no, just shut up and dance.
Yeah.
So on Friday, I'm going to guess that when we all saw the initial reports coming out of the Minnesota Supreme Court Friday, at least I know that, I won't speak for you guys, but I know I did. When I first saw the reports, I was really taken aback. As a matter of fact, Sam had texted us in the initial report of what the Minnesota Supreme Court had done, saying that Dayton's veto of the legislative budget was constitutional. I was like, what? And then you hop on Twitter, and then I go, oh, that's not really what happened.
No,
that's just
not
the
at
way
all.
That it was being portrayed.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just simply ignorance of the law on the media's part, or if this is some sort of agenda on their part of shaping the coverage of the story. But you're right, John. This is it. The way that's been covered is absolutely the opposite of what this ruling is. This wasn't. If this had been a victory for Governor Dayton, the Supreme Court would have said in there, they're reversing the decision of the district court, reversed and remanded or reversed, and they would have entered a decision.
And that did not happen.
No, this is like what they would call like an interlocutory order, where they're basically in the meet saying, they come out and they say, yeah, it's the line item veto is constitutional, but you can't use a constitutional power to achieve an unconstitutional result. That's been the whole crux of the case, is that he zeroed out the funding for, you know, for a branch of the government. And, you know, then at the very end, they lay out, they basically have, like you said earlier, guys, they punted. They said, we don't want to deal with it. You know, and which is the same thing that happens on the federal level with the Roberts Supreme Court. They always try to find nuances and punt and stay out of the political fray. And so at the end, the order is basically sending them to mediation before they actually issue a ruling on the constitutionality of the action of zeroing out the legislative funding. And if you look at the language in the first paragraph of the order, it's pretty clear they might be heading down a path that the governor doesn't like.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we talked about prior to the judicial branch vindication of the people's constitutional right to three independent functioning branches of government, other branches should have the opportunity to resolve this dispute. That's basically saying before we step in and actually decide this, you're getting one more chance to resolve this. And they send them they have to make them pick a mediator. And back to the coverage, my concern is our governor gets so delusional about with what he thinks in his mind. I mean, he thought this was a constitutional thing in the first place. My concern is that this media coverage is just going to embolden him to dig his heels in this mediation and insist that, you know, he's a tough negotiator in the first place, hard to give on anything. So the question is he just going to dig his heels in and insist that, well, I won, so you got to go my way now and take out and change all these bills.
Well, and even when you get into the details of the article, because I think a part of it, not to give the media a free pass, but I think a part of it can be we need to get the story out as quickly as possible, and we'll just go with they ruled it constitutional. Mm-hmm. But even when you get into the stories themselves, they still framed it in such a way that it sounds like, oh, see, GOP's got to come back to the table now, and they're going to have to work with Dayton, and that just was not the case.
Well, they are forcing them into mediation.
Sure,
which the GOP, which the legislature. Legislative leaders had said they were not going to do. They were not going to go back and renegotiate with the governor on this issue. So they are being ordered,
but not because the GOP did anything wrong.
Right, exactly. And just because they're entering mediation, it's not like it compels either side to give any ground.
No, this is not like a binding arbitration. It's not even a binding thing. I do these all the time when we've got lawsuits and we're trying to resolve them. Every suit in the state is referred to at some point to mediation to try to resolve it if you don't settle it early enough. So this is just kind of, this is more procedural, just saying we're going to treat you like any other litigants and you're going to try to do mediation to see if you can solve it. And if you can't, then you'll come back to the court.
Right. Then we'll make a decision. It's like parents with two siblings that are arguing. It's like, you guys go work this out.
Yep.
You got 10 minutes to go work this out. If not, I'm going to make a decision and one of you is not going to like it.
Yeah. And look, in my opinion on this, Dayton is still the one that is going to have to concede. He's the one that did this. But it makes me laugh into what you were saying a moment ago, Jeff O'Brien. Dayton said he was vindicated. I'm very pleased that my constitutional right to line item veto certain appropriations for the Minnesota House and Senate was upheld by the Minnesota Supreme Court, even though they said that, yeah, but you can't but what you've done is unconstitutional.
Right. So that's going to be his position in this mediation.
Well, here's a clue. I think there's a line in the court's decision that I think gives you a clue where if mediation fails and the court is forced to make a decision, gives you an indication of where you think they're going to go. The court wrote, Minnesotans may soon be deprived of their constitutional right to three independent branches of government. So if Dayton doesn't concede anything, and if the GOP doesn't concede anything, the legislature doesn't concede anything, then the court's going to have to take some action to ensure that Minnesotans have their constitutional right to three independent branches of government.
That's right.
And that is not going to, in my opinion, work out well for Dayton.
I would hope not, Drew. But as we talked off air over the weekend, my concern here, now we don't know, Justice Strauss recused himself. No one really knows why. What his reason is maybe because he's been considered for this Eighth Circuit seat. So maybe that's why he was recused himself. I don't know. But the end result was you had four of the six justices deciding this being appointed by Governor Dayton himself. So I do have a question as to how are four justices who were appointed by one of the litigants, you know, why would they not be asked to recuse themselves and have four retired justices sit in their place to decide it?
Well, if the GOP held their ground and it ended up getting back to them, haven't they already kind of played their hand in making this ruling?
I don't know. I mean, the Chief Justice, you know, seems to indicate that, but there was no dissent. There's been no other opinions other than just this one written by the Chief Justice. So we know there's been nothing that's said as to what a majority of the court would do. I would hope that they would, you know, look past who appointed them.
Right.
And, I mean, that's their job. But it's rare that you'd have the situation where you have, the Supreme Court hearing a case where the governor who appointed many of the justices is actually a party to the case.
Out of the Pioneer Press yesterday, they did a pretty good job of breaking it down. Peter Watson, former longtime state Senate counsel, briefly worked for Dayton, says the order shows that the court is not done with the case yet. They haven't to send it back to the lower courts. They're going to find out a little bit more about this before they make the final ruling. The court, again, ordered both the governor and the legislature to write memos that address the constitutionality of the judicial branch ordering funding to the legislature. So what do you think the GOP's move is going to be at this point in time? I mean, they have to go into mediation. They have to bring somebody in. But what do you think they end up doing with this?
You know, John, that's a good question. I don't know. I would hope that they would stand their ground and not just give in to what the governor wants. Because it really, if this is resolved in mediation, I think this establishes a dangerous precedent. And I think it creates an issue for next year's campaign. I think you might see the legislature go back in and put a constitutional amendment on the ballot. I mean, they don't need the governor's approval to do something like that. And I also think that every single candidate for governor on both sides is going to be asked whether it's appropriate for the governor to use a line item veto to veto out the funding for either the legislative or the judicial branch.
I hope you're right. I think this should be something that all gubernatorial candidates should have to answer for. I do not want to see this set as a precedent. I don't want to see this going forward because it gives the governor his own little Death Star.
That's
when
exactly
it comes
right.
To negotiations. All right, fine. You won't give us what I want. I'm going to blow up Alderaan.
And there's a part a part of me says in the back of my mind still says that the court is going to go if this ultimately has to be decided by the Supreme Court, they will go against the governor because in the back of their mind. They have to be thinking, what if a governor were to zero out the funding for the courts because they disagree with the decision of the Supreme Court?
On comments from the GOP, House Speaker Kurt Dowd said, we're ready to go to mediation to secure funding for the legislative branch of government. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka said in a joint statement, we worked in good faith in the past to attempt to breach this impasse and will work in good faith again as we look ahead to the mediation process. That's a little bit more benign of a comment there than what Dowd was saying.
But it still comes down to the fact in my mind that Governor Dayton signed these bills into law.
Yep.
And it is disingenuous and dishonest of him to sign something into law and then line item veto legislative appropriations as a tactic to try to negotiate away policy items that he signed into law.
That's right. I mean, this is like suing somebody for breach of contract because you sign a contract and they won't renegotiate it.
Yeah.
Because you don't like it.
Right. Meanwhile, they've lived up to the terms of the contract.
Right, yeah. Right.
The Republican legislative leaders said they were pleased that the court acknowledged the legislature must function, cited a 1955 case in its order that concluded the constitutional powers cannot be used to accomplish an unconstitutional result. But it's interesting because Dayton kind of took the same route the media did in this, just going, I won. Well, at least I won that.
Yeah.
But I won.
If this were a boxing match, Dayton might have won a round here,
mm-hmm.
You know, but he has not won the fight.
Apparently.
And there's still many rounds to go.
It's a boxing match. I say it's almost like they locked gloves in the middle of the ring and they were sent back to their corners. I mean, that's kind of what it was. I mean, I don't necessarily the fact that they have left the ultimate question open, I don't think stands as a win for the governor at all.
No, not at all. And this is going to go back to mediation. And my expectation, and I'm curious to see what you think, Jeff O'Brien, my expectation is that nothing's really going to be resolved in mediation. They'll go through the process. Neither side's going to budge.
Yeah,
and ultimately, the court is going to have to make a decision on this.
I would think so, and I would hope so. I think they're going to have to stand – the legislature's going to have to stand their ground on this and ultimately have the court can't keep punting this decision. They're going to have to decide so the line on veto is constitutional. We all knew that. The question is, can it be used this way? They even say in the reason they can't use a constitutional power to accomplish an unconstitutional result. they're going to have to put it. I think they're going to have to put it in an actual opinion that the governor can't do this.
Well, in keeping with the sort of boxing analogy, if Dayton won anything in this, any round in this, it was within the public opinion and the way that this was put out there, because so many people that support Dayton are using this and looking at it as a victory for him, which is unfortunate because that just was not the case. But as we all saw on Friday and the way that was all initially reported, that's what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you read past the third paragraph of the order, you realize there's a lot more than just the governor's act was constitutional.
Yeah. Reporting on court decisions is hard.
Yeah.
It involves a lot of reading.
Yes, yes. Yeah. All six pages, you know, reading all
That's
six pages.
That's why we bring you in.
Exactly. That's right.
Let's do all the reading for us.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, guys. Good to be
seeing
here.
You. Appreciate
the
input.
And proud member of the KISS Army.
There you go.
That's right. Drew, you're a member too, right?
I might join. I might see if they'll take a late recruit.